Who's a professor of health studies at Eastern Illinois University with over 20 years of experience in the classroom. Her areas of interest include health communication, health behavior theory, community diagnosis, human sexuality, and college student health issues. Dr. Dietz?
And since I'm a teacher, this is usually the point in the workshop where I say stand up and stretch if you need to. I'm also going to apologize for my lovely voice. It is harvest season in the Midwest, which is really good if you have asthma. And that decided to kick in, so pardon me if I cough. For some reason, my disclosure slide is not up there, but I did want to clarify something with this. No, I have no financial connection to any of this. However, after I was analyzing my results, I wanted to use a few examples from reported behavior of college students, and I just happened to have access to that. I contacted the director of the Illinois Higher Education Center about using some data from their core alcohol and other drug use survey. The previous academic year, they had worked with faculty in my department and purchased release time for all of us to help them out, and I got to write the summary report, which is why I knew about the data set. So that's the only financial connection. It has nothing to do with my work, but in full disclosure, let's just make sure we have it all out there. In 2009, I was approached by an alumnus of our program on behalf of IPIC, the Illinois Preconception and Interconceptional Care Committee. You can see why we call it IPIC. They wanted to focus on college-age individuals at that time because they had been so successful in many other efforts. The March of Dimes was represented on this committee, a number of Illinois affiliate organizations, and they were particularly concerned because then, as now, 50% of all pregnancies in Illinois are unplanned, and 50% of those occur to college-age women. So this started a class project. I teach applied health communication along with 14,000 other courses, and we developed and implemented and evaluated the results of a survey assessing college student knowledge. I want to say right up front, this was IPIC's request. My students said, why do they want us to assess knowledge? We already know this stuff. We just don't think it matters. And indeed, my students were right. Our college students were very knowledgeable about preconception health. They just didn't think it had anything to do with them. This led to the present study, which caused me to ask the question, why do most intervention efforts with college students in general fail? And I'm a health behavior person by training, and my assessment was that we fail to assess the nature of the problem in this particular population. We tend to assume that college students are simply ignorant and we need to throw more information at them. And we miss and ignore or dismiss not just perceived barriers, their perceived barriers, especially in the social realm and their social networks. Students honestly believe they're going to change once they leave college, and they're not receptive to efforts to change right now. It's too stressful, and they really don't think they need to do it right now. It's magically going to happen when they leave college. The more we throw information at them and the more we push them to change, the farther away we actually push them because they don't think they need that right now. So, being a health behavior theory person, I pulled out stage theory, particularly the precaution adoption process model. For those of you who are not familiar with it, it is specifically designed to try to help us better understand why people do not engage in risk avoidance or protective behaviors when they are at risk. We developed a survey and piloted it early in fall 2010. One of my students from the previous class was very interested, and she engaged in some independent study to do this. And we administered it late in fall of 2010, utilizing SurveyMonkey and the all-student email list on campus of an institution in the Midwest. You can probably guess which one. Our respondent profile looks like this. And this is very consistent with the profile at the institution we conducted this at. That's about a 10% response rate. We found out after the fact that the spam filters on the university email system had failed and nobody was bothering to check their email because we were averaging 1,000 emails a day. that made it difficult for ours to stick out. We did have follow-up protocols and attempt to reach them, but when you're getting 1,000 emails a day, one little email from Dr. Dietz is not going to get through. One of the first things we looked at, the next two slides give you a snapshot of their perception of their need to change specific types of behaviors that are keyed into preconception health. As you can see from the very long blue lines, that's the people who don't think they need to change anything. Notably, only nutrition and weight management emerged as things that they felt maybe they needed to do something about. That is probably in part to the tie-in with appearance. If we take out that don't need to change group just for the sake of being visually better able to look at this, this is everyone else. If you note, again, with nutrition and weight management, the higher up the bar is in the sequence, the more likely they are to be trying to do something about it. Those are the ones that they are trying to do something about it. One other thing I want to call your attention to is the blue bar on birth control. Almost 15% of them chose not to respond to the question about birth control. I think they're a little tired of being asked. And they are tired of being bombarded with that message. So here's where the IHEC data comes in. IHEC stands for the Illinois Higher Education Center for Alcohol, Other Drug, and Violence Prevention. And every 2 years, they administer the Illinois Core Alcohol and Other Drugs Survey. This is a really neat data set. I don't know how easy it is to get access to the complete set. The summary report is available. If you pull the slides up online, you can get the hyperlink to that. Or you can just look up Illinois Higher Ed Center, and you're going to find it. The summary report focuses on alcohol and other drug consumption on campus and patterns there. This is the report I did. This ends my financial affiliation. We had approximately just over 16,000 respondents from 29 institutions in Illinois, 23 of them four-year institutions, both private and public, two bachelor's, master's, and doctoral level, and 6 2-year institutions. And what this gave me is something that might give me a snapshot. It's only useful as a snapshot because there's no direct correlation between my sample and this, other than the preconception study was conducted at one of the four-year bachelor institutions that participated in the core survey. So I thought it was at least gave us a snapshot of similarity. So what can we glean from this? What can we learn? Although almost 72% of the preconception study subjects perceived no need to change their alcohol habits, and of course alcohol is a big issue with interconceptual care, 48% of the respondents on that core survey reported that they had been binge drinking in the 2 weeks prior to the survey, and 25% reported having serious personal problems as a direct relationship to their alcohol consumption, including sexual assault, suicidal ideation, and injury. So obviously, even though they don't think they need to change, they do need to change. Not that this is a surprise to any of us who work with college students. The core respondents from the four-year bachelor institution, so pulling out the institutions most similar to the institution at which the preconception survey was done, reported an average of 5.49 drinks per week, and they weren't spreading it out over the entire week either. Most of them were averaging 2, maybe 3 days a week that they were drinking. For most of these people, that's enough in one sitting that they are not thinking clearly, nor are they making good decisions. What else can we glean? About 78% of the respondents in the preconception study felt that they really did not need to change anything about their sexual activity behaviors. So when I looked at the core does not directly ask about a lot of this other than in relationship to substance consumption. But I did pull out a few things. One, 8.6% of core respondents reported having been taken advantage of sexually, and 2.2% say that they've actually taken advantage of someone else. This is also particularly correlated with their substance consumption. This is an extreme, but if this is, I'm sorry, this seems high to me. If this is high, what about the less extreme behaviors? 6.8% saw absolutely no drink in drinking prior, and no risk in drinking prior to sex. 20% only saw a little bit of risk, and on the other end, only 35% saw a significant risk to drinking prior to sex. And we know, of course, if they are consuming prior to sex, they are not probably using birth control, they are not being concerned about sexually transmitted infections, and that means conception possibility goes up, and we know that there's a relationship between father's alcohol consumption and effects on the fetus. You know, we've got a whole pattern here. When you consider that 25% of all pregnancies in Illinois are happening to unplanned college-age people, this is really scary. So, what key points can we take from this? Most college students see very little need to change any of their health behaviors other than those that affect appearance or social desirability. Most college students really are not thinking about preconception health because they don't think it's relevant, and they really would rather prefer to not think about unintended pregnancy because it's not going to happen to them. So wait a minute, aren't we supposed to be talking about males here? Yes, we are. I actually found a little bit of hope here. I believe that male college students may actually prove to be easier to convince to change their behaviors. But if we try to convince them by talking to them about preconception health, it isn't going to happen. We're doomed. They don't want to hear about that. So what do they care about? And that is the question we need to be asking. And this is a recurring theme in several sessions I attended yesterday. We need to understand our people and understand what's important to them before we try to do anything to them. The male respondents in my study were more likely to believe that their current health behaviors will have an effect on their long-term health than the female respondents. This stunned me. We think of females being far more in tune with their health and their health care access. The men were much more likely to believe that what they were doing now would have an effect on them in the future. They were more likely to perceive potential harm from their current health habits. They're still doing them, but they realize that there's harm there. They just don't think they need to fix it right now, and that was a recurring theme. There are massive contradictions. They're not ready to be pushed into anything. So the question that my student Allison and I asked each other, what do they care about? And is there something that they care about enough that we could use that to convince them to alter some of their behaviors? And we came up with the whole idea of masculinity because the one thing that emerged very clearly is fertility was very important to them. They didn't want to use it right now, but they didn't want to lose it either. Fertility and long-term fertility was important. 83.5% of the male respondents were planning to have children in their future. We asked them several different timelines just to estimate how strong that intention was, but overwhelmingly, yes, they were planning to do that. But almost 56% saw no connection between what they were doing now and that goal. They saw no connection. The IHEC data, as well as a million and one studies that are out there, confirm that many of the men in this 55.9% must have behaviors that are running directly counter to their stated goal of having children. They just haven't made the connection yet. And that also is a consistent thing that I have seen talking to colleagues who are doing related research, that they understand, but everything is in its little box, and they don't make the interconnections between them. So what are we going to do? We need to identify what they do care about that and use that to reframe the issue away from the one they don't want to think about, unintended pregnancy. They feel constantly bombarded with, don't get pregnant, don't get pregnant, don't get her pregnant. And so it's gone. They are not paying attention to it at all. I think we also need to look at stage theory because one of the other things that I see consistently is programs that are really not very well designed for the people they're geared for. Those of you who are not familiar with the precaution adoption process model, here's a snapshot. Take a look at it. It was originally designed to figure out why people don't get their homes tested for radon. It is specifically targeting why do people who are at risk, why don't they do anything about it? We didn't really assess how unaware our students were because we already knew they were aware. We were far more interested in some of these other steps. And this is what we found. Unengaged is characterized by, I know about it, I just don't think it matters to me why it's not relevant. And we found almost 6% of our students were in this stage. The only thing that's going to move them is some type of personal experience, whether it's theirs or their peers, that's vicarious learning, that will encourage them to take the next step. Deciding, are they they've realized there's a problem, they know they need to do something, they think they need maybe to do something, and they're trying to figure out whether or not they need to. That was about another 6%. This is where the traditional informational campaign may work. As long as you're emphasizing self-efficacy, because if you don't put self-efficacy in them, you're going to scare them and they're going to run the other direction. You need to target perceived barriers as a part of that. The decided not to act, these are the ones who've thought about it, and they've decided they don't need to do anything. And that was almost 22% of our population. About 16% said, I'm fine, I don't need to do anything. We didn't try to assess whether or not that was an accurate perception. It may be for some of them. The rest of them, about 5%, said, college is too hard, it's too stressful, I can't do something else, I'm coping with enough. An important thing to recognize with this group is depending on why they've decided not to act, you're not going to change that. That's a hard thing for us to accept, especially those of us in health education, that there may be some people out there that there is no point in our trying to do anything because it's a waste of resources. And boy, that sounds harsh, but it is maybe accurate. What may change is something's going to have to change their opinion about this. If we can reframe the issue so that they see it differently, that may change it. But if you have limited resources, you need to target in to start with the people who are going to be receptive to what you're doing. And diffusion of innovation theory addresses this very issue as well. And don't get me started on theory. 31% have decided to do something. They're just trying to figure out what. They're ready for you to give them that action campaign. They're ready for that prepackaged program. Just tell me what to do. Point me in the right direction. I'll do it. I'm ready. Unfortunately, the vast majority of campaigns we see on campus are all action-oriented. When you think about it in terms of maybe 30 to 35% of your population is ready for that, that explains a lot, doesn't it? It explains why we have so few people participate, because really, most of them aren't ready for that. And about 35% are already trying to do something, they just need help maintaining what they're doing and keeping up with it. Excuse me. My experience is that most intervention efforts on college are action-oriented, as I said. At any given time, again, most of them are not ready for that. The rest are either not there yet, and the more we push them, the farther they run away. Or they're already doing something, and they don't appreciate your telling them that what they're doing is not what they should be, because we've defined what they should be doing as what we think they should be doing. Most interventions are measured by the number of people who complete the change, not by progress towards change, and that's where stage theory really helps us out and assess progress. Many interventions cast their nets way too widely and obscure their successes in the clutter of people who were never going to do anything anyway. Reaching a few of the interested people, 20 of the 100 interested people, is a lot better than reaching 20 of the 1,000 everybody. Well, you were never going to reach the 1,000 everybody. You're actually doing better than you thought you were. And my last thoughts here, and I've avoided coughing. I'm pretty happy with that. By understanding male college student culture and socialization, we can better understand their priorities as men and have a better chance of designing an intervention that will reframe desirable preconception health behaviors as behaviors capable of improving their cultural acceptability and their social success as men. Thank you.